So I'll stand together tonight and we'll turn over to the book of Micah in the Old Testament. Micah chapter 7, verse 1. Woe is me, for I am like those who gather summer fruits, like those who glean vintage grapes. There is no cluster to eat of the first ripe fruit which my soul desires. The faithful man has perished from the earth, and there is no one upright among men. They all lie in wait for blood. Every man hunts his neighbor or his brother with a net. And may God bless the reading of his word tonight. It's my prayer you may be seated. Plain truth from picking fruit. Micah begins by telling us that I am like those who gather summer fruits. It didn't mean that he was actually out picking fruit. He said, I'm like those. He describes a situation, and yet it was one that the people of Israel would have recognized very quickly, and I think we'll understand as we look a little bit closer and dig a little deeper into it tonight. Certainly he could have been out picking fruit. He would not have been the first one that God called out of the fields to serve him. Had he been out there picking fruit and God spoke to him, gave him a message while he was there, it wouldn't have been uncommon. One of my favorite Old Testament prophets is Amos. Amos said, I wasn't a prophet or the son of a prophet. I wasn't a prophet, he said, by profession. I wasn't a prophet by parentage, but the Lord took me. And listen, that's all any prophet ever needed to begin with. The Lord took me. He said, I was a herdsman. I was a tender of sycamore fruit, whatever that was. And so he was a fruit picker. He was a herdsman. And God called him off the farm to come and serve him. He wasn't the only one. Ezekiel was by the river Shebar when he saw visions of God in Babylon. And he had been a priest, but of course the temple had been destroyed. He'd been deported. Who knows if it ever be back to see Jerusalem again. And yet he found out that the God who had been his God in Jerusalem was still his God in Babylon. God had a message and he appeared to him right there while he was out working in the fields with all the other farmhands. And God called Ezekiel and gave him. And what a magnificent message. Do you good every now and then when the world's looking a little crazy. Pull up Ezekiel chapter 1 and verse 2 and just see, or chapter 1 and chapter 2, and just see that incredible vision that Ezekiel saw when God had brought his throne room down to this world. An incredible, incredible vision. Moses had grown up in a palace. His hand, no doubt, was destined to hold a scepter. Maybe not the scepter, but certainly one. He was prince of Egypt. That did not qualify him to lead God's people. Instead, God would send him out into the wilderness where he would tend sheep for 40 years. And we've often said it, it's always been true, that Moses at 40 thought that he was qualified to lead God's people, and he wasn't. When he was 80 years old, after 40 years attending sheep, he thought he was a farmhand. And that was all. He was not possibly going to be able to lead God's people. And yet, what did God show up and ask him? What's that in your hand? A shepherd's staff. That's all God needed. Just a shepherd with a staff that would surrender to him. And Moses did that. And so this would be a long line had God appeared to Micah there while he was working out in the field picking fruit and gave him a message. He would have been one in a long line of farmers and herdsmen. I mean, even David, who wasn't just the prophet, but a potentate, God would tell him, you know, I took you from the sheep coat, just following sheep, made you king over all my people Israel. God's called a lot of field hands and fishermen and farmers to do his work throughout all the years. And even though I say that, I can't help but chuckle. And what I'm chuckling at is a memory that I have of an old man when I pastored over at Hazen. And Hazen area, Prairie County, kind of had a reputation of being, in fact, it was called at one time a preacher factory. They just had so many great preachers who came out of that area. But not everybody that surrendered to preach over there made a great preacher. And I was talking to one of these old men about it, and he said, well, he told me, he said, Brother Rich, or Brother Richard, they called me back then. But he said, I don't believe you're going to be one of them cotton sack preachers. And I thought, what in the world? What's a cotton sack preacher? I'd never heard such a term. And he said, well, that's them guys that's out there dragging that heavy cotton sack down a cotton row picking cotton that all of a sudden decided God had called them to preach. He said, you're not going to be one of those. And I've certainly tried not to be. Not going to tell you that a lot of guys maybe weren't out there and thought they heard from God and didn't, but sometimes God has gotten some messages across to his people. We don't know when Micah may have been involved in the fruit picking business himself, but he certainly knew it. And he describes a situation in our text where a grape vine, a grape harvest was on. And that was a big deal in Israel, the harvest of grapes. It was a joyful time. Here was a vineyard that had been carefully prepared and carefully kept. They've watched the grapes and they know now that it's time to harvest them. They've employed these men who will come and harvest the grapes for them. And these aren't just any kind of grapes. These are vintage grapes. I mean, they are ripe for the picking. But when the workers get there, there are no clusters. Clusters are all gone. What their soul desired, those first ripe fruits that they'd planned on picking that day, the ones that had just got ripe, I mean the first fruits, they were so excited. Somebody had got there and they were all gone. And instead, that all that was left were the gleanings. You're like those who glean vintage grapes. All that was left was the gleanings. And the people of the Old Testament, though it's a kind of a foreign language to us, they would have known that immediately because, you see, the gleanings were what had fallen on the ground, what the harvesters had left or missed, something that was hidden maybe behind a leaf or maybe something tucked up somewhere, something that fell to the ground and it had escaped the notice of the harvesters. And those gleanings then, meager though they were God's welfare program in the ancient Israel, because the widows and the impoverished people then could come along after the harvesters and they could glean. It was slim pickings indeed. The choice grapes were all gone, and all that was left was just a raisin or two here dried up. One on the ground's all mushy. All the good ones were gone. And Micah then uses that as an example of what was going on in the nation. Because as he looked around at the nation of God's people, then that's exactly what he could say. The faithful man has perished from the earth. All the good ones are gone. And there's none upright among men. They all lie in wait for blood. Every man hunts his brother with a net. The good men, the faithful men, that could have led the nation into righteousness, that could have been a blessing to them, the good ones were gone. And all that was left were the vicious, the predators, the people who were hunting others. He would go on and describe them as they go on. But, you know, that's a very sad situation that he's looking at. We can almost hear and certainly feel Micah's disturbance, how sad he was, how disturbing it was to have this expectation then that there would be good men everywhere hanging ripe on the vine. So that you could just walk in there and grab, man, there'd be good men everywhere. This is God's people, God's nation. Surely there'll be good people everywhere. And instead, they were all gone. And all that was left was just the gleanings. And the gleanings were the fruit that really nobody would want. Good ones were gone. Out of that then comes some great advice for us. How do you deal with that? And he tells us in Micah chapter 7 and verse 7, therefore he said, I will look to the Lord. I will wait for the God of my salvation. My God will hear me. So out of this very disturbing situation then, Micah gives us some plain truth of how we are to react when we look around, maybe even in our nation. And some of you might think already you're getting ahead of me, I can tell. You look around in our nation and sometimes you wonder, where have all the good men gone? Thank God there's still some out there. We've got some right here in our own community. We look in political leadership, and there are some good men out there, godly men, people who love Jesus Christ, and we're thankful for them. But oh, I tell you, they're few and far between. And just across the board then, and in our national leadership, sometimes we would ask, where have all the good men gone? Is this really all we have to look to? Where are all the good ones? Well, Micah doesn't stop with his description of what was going on in the nation and how bad things really were. In Micah chapter 6, verse 10 through 11, he's already told us about this. Are there yet the treasures of wickedness in the house of the wicked, and the short measure that is an abomination? Shall I count pure those with the wicked scales and with the bag of deceitful weights? Now, out of all the things that God could have picked out, he picked out the crooks. Shall I count you guiltless? God really didn't like it when people used a deceitful measure and had weights that were marked with one thing when they were really something else, so that they were cheating and robbing those hardworking people who would bring their crops in and weigh them out. And then there was somebody taking advantage of them with their wicked scales and their bag of deceitful weights. And God says, I won't hold them guiltless. And that's a good thing for us to notice tonight. God knows who all the con artists are in this country. He knows who they are right here in Cabot, Arkansas. He knows them all. He sees what they're doing. And they're going to be held accountable for it. But there was a whole lot of that going on in Micah's day. He goes on then in chapter 7, verse 3, these people that he's talking about, that they may successfully do evil with both hands. That's talking about their greediness. The prince asks for gifts, the judge seeks a bride, and the great man utters his evil desire. So they scheme together. The best of them is like a briar. The most upright is sharper than a thorn hedge. You ever run into a thorn hedge? Wow. I'm not sure that Micah was talking about blackberry vines, but I'm going to tell you what. If you get in a blackberry vine place, especially in the middle of the night, and that happens sometimes when you're following something like an old deer, and man, they love those blackberry vines, and all of a sudden you're in the middle of them, and it's awful. I'm going to tell you, it's awful. The most upright of them, he said, the best of them is sharper than a thorn hedge. The best of them is like a briar. Some very sharp people. But God says, the day of your watchman and your punishment comes, now shall be their perplexity. All of their sharpness, all of their schemes, all their bribes, all of the conspiracy going on between all the great men, it's not going to deliver them from the judgment of God. God is seeing all this, Micah says. He doesn't stop verse 5. Just how wicked has the nation become? It seems like, remember, the whole imagery. All the good ones are gone. How wicked is it? How bad is it really, Micah? Don't trust in a friend. Do not put your confidence in a companion. Guard the doors of your mouth from her who lies in your bosom. For son dishonors father, daughter rises against her mother, daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies are the men of his own household. So that the wickedness of the nation had so permeated it, that the people that you should be able to trust, you can't trust. Trust a friend? No. A companion? Somebody you've known all your life? No. That woman who lies in your bosom? Your wife? No. Your son? No. Daughter? No. Daughter-in-law? Right in within your own household. All of the people then that we would think that we could count on, the ones that we would lean on the most. And Micah looked at the nation. All the good ones are gone. All the good ones are gone. Don't know where all they went. But what's left is an evil, conniving, scheming bunch that you can't trust and you have to be careful all the time. All the good ones were gone. It's kind of a sad look, isn't it? If that's all we had, I'd just about want to sit down and cry, you know. Surely there's some breath of good news. What do you do, Micah? What do you do? Well, Micah tells us, first of all, I am looking to the Lord. Therefore, I will look to the Lord. And you notice, of course, right off the bat that the Lord is in all caps, and that it means that it is a usage of the word Jehovah. I will look to the Lord. This is His sacred covenant name. And all that that meant to them as a people. I will look to the Lord. This is the one who had revealed Himself as the all-sufficient one. I am what I am. That meant to Micah at this particular moment in time that he could look to the Lord, knowing that God could handle whatever was going on. If he looked around him to his closest friends, all he would get was disturbed. If he looked even within his own family, maybe even in his own marriage, anywhere that he looked, all he could see was disturbance. But in the midst of that, he says, I'll look to the Lord. I'll think about our God. What great advice that is for us tonight. I will look to the Lord. Because our God, you see, is the great I Am. That means that our God is all sufficient. He is sufficient for whatever it is. God would ask us the question, is there anything too hard for me? And the answer, of course, is no. No. God's not in a tight. God's not in a bind. He's not calling for help. We're not going to have to go prop Him up somehow. No, God is God. He is the all-sufficient one. He has all that He needs and all that we need. We can count on Him. Look to Him. Psalmist David would say, I will lift up mine eyes unto the hills. From whence cometh my strength, my Redeemer? From time to time, we can read the words of David and just see, reflect on all the things that God is. He'd call God my rock, my Redeemer, my shelter. Over and over again, my sustainer. Over and over again, then he would heap up the descriptions of all the things that God is to us. I will look to the Lord. If you're saved tonight, God's your Savior. If you're saved tonight, that means that God is a guarantee of your salvation. If you're saved tonight, it means that you're absolutely certain of heaven and that God has done for you what you could never do for yourself. But He didn't just stop there. He's still your God. He's made many glorious promises. So no matter how bad things may look around us, when we look around and we just say all the good ones are gone, then we need to look up. I'm looking to the Lord. Then the second thing he tells us in this passage is, I will wait. I will wait on the Lord. I'll wait for the God of my salvation. I will wait. Don't you just like waiting? Isn't that just one of your favorite things to do? I've often reflected, and you've probably heard me say this before, but it's very fitting for tonight, and some of you hadn't heard me say it before, so I'm going to say it again. A generation ago, people would be upset when they missed a stagecoach, knowing that it would be 6 weeks before another one came by. Said today's generation gets mad if we miss a panel in a revolving door. We can't stand to wait. I can't stand to wait. You can't. Waiting is hard, and it seems like it gets more and more difficult on us. we've just come to expect that everything is instant, and instant communication. And you text somebody, they don't text you right back. Man, we're upset. Send out an email. Don't get an email right back. Call them. They don't call you right back. I mean, we've just come to expect instantaneous everything. Have you figured out by now that God don't punch our time clock? Amen. He's not accountable to us. People say, well, it's hard to wait on God. No, it's not. If God tarries, we wait. That's the way it is. It is hard, though, in its own way. I will wait. We could look at a lot of examples tonight about all the people who didn't wait for God or who got tired for waiting for God. And when they do, you know, of course, we know what we do then. We take matters into our own hands. How'd that work out for Abraham and Sarah and Hagar? Oh, don't you wish Abraham would have just waited a little longer on the Lord? World's been paying for that decision ever since, and we'll pay for it until Jesus comes and gets it all settled. Waiting on the Lord means that we understand there's a lot of things that only God can do, and when we're caught looking to God, especially in a situation like what Micah was in, where all the good ones were gone, and he's looking to God, along with that, he counsels us, he gives us strong example. I will wait for the God of my salvation. It is so hard for us to avoid the temptation of taking matters in our own hands. I will wait for the God of my salvation. The psalmist put it this way in Psalm 37, rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who brings wicked schemes to pass. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret, it only causes harm. For evildoers shall be cut off, but those who wait on the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. I wish I had a clear and fast, rock-hard passage of Scripture that explained for us emphatically, without any question, how we could know when we're just wasting time because there's something we can do and God expects us to do it, or when we're waiting on the Lord because there's nothing I can do. It's hard to know. It's hard to know. I wish it was easy. I wish I had a passage of Scripture that explained it for you and laid it all out for you. And even just in the natural world, you know, we understand that people struggle with this. You know the old sayings. Is it true that all good things come to those that wait? Or is it true that the early bird gets the worm? I mean, which one is it? And I know those aren't Bible verses, but they're even in just the general world view of things. It's hard to know sometimes. But when we're looking to the Lord, and then we will wait on the Lord and rest in him and wait patiently for him. Folk, we'll face a lot of situations in life that we can't do anything about. And when we look around at a national calamity like Micah was, then what his nation needed, and Micah knew it, it needed a mighty work of God, a mighty movement of God, and it was probably going to require the judgment of God to bring it all to pass. It was only going to be the judgment of God when God called all these people into account, as we'll see in a moment, that things would turn around. And so while Micah was looking to the Lord and waiting on the Lord, there's one more thing. He was talking to the Lord too. Therefore, I will look to the Lord. I will wait for the God of my salvation. My God will hear me. My God will hear. And so he goes on, tells us what he was talking to God about. Do not rejoice over me, my enemy. When I fall, I will arise. When I sit in darkness, the Lord will be a light to me. I will bear the indignation of the Lord because I have sinned against him. Until he pleads my case and executes justice for me, he will bring me forth to the light. I will see his righteousness. Then she who is my enemy will see, and shame will cover her who said to me, "Where is the Lord your God?" My eyes will see her. Now she will be trampled down like mud in the streets. And since this was a national situation, it was probably a national enemy that Micah was talking about. And the she in this passage would refer to a nation that was oppressing them, mocking them. But Micah would say, my God will hear me. So don't rejoice over me. Micah makes a very interesting statement in verse 9 when he said, I will bear the indignation of the Lord. You see, the Bible tells us very plainly, there's not a just man upon the earth that doeth good and sinneth not. That included Micah. And it's a funny thing. It always happens when we start praying for God to execute judgment. You know what always happens? We're convicted because, hey, I'm a sinner too. And we know something. That when God moves in judgment, God always starts at the same place. You know where that is? It is time that judgment begins at the house of God. Yeah. So if we're going to pray for God to straighten up all them wicked people out there, then Micah's going to say, and he tells us, God's got some indignation for me too. But he says, I'm ready for that. I will bear his indignation. I deserve it. I've sinned against God. I know it. God's got some judgment for me too. I know that. I've got some things to answer for. I know that. But at the end of that, you see, Micah was a man of faith. Micah was a believer, and he knew that his security rested in the Lord, and there'd be a time that though God might judge him, yes, God was going to bring him forth in righteousness, because that's a promise he makes to every one of his children. Your righteousness will shine forth. Why? Because it's not the righteousness of my works. It's not the righteousness of my performance. It is the imputed righteousness that comes to us by faith. Abraham believed God, and it was accounted unto him for righteousness. So yes, I will bear God's indignation. Yes, Micah says, I will deal with what I have done. I will give my account. I'm ready for that because I know that when God is through with that, he's going to bring me forth in righteousness because I believed on him and I've trusted him and I've followed him. And I know then that God will bring me forth in righteousness. Though I fall, I'll rise. God's not going to let me go down completely. And so Micah could in full confidence then pray for God to deal with all the wickedness, all the evil people who were crying out against God's people, all of those who were practicing deceit, all of those who were running after each other to shed blood, all the violence, all the wickedness. He could cry out to God, God, I'm calling on you and I know you'll hear me. It's time to move. I still pray for revival. I do it all the time. Our nation needs one. But they may not be ready for one until they go through a time of judgment. God knows when a nation needs a time of judgment. He's done it over and over again. He knows when the only thing a nation will respond to that would cause them to turn back to him. He knows when that's judgment. He does. But he also knows that if my people, as he's told us, will humble themselves and pray and turn from their wicked ways and seek my face, then God says, I will hear from heaven. I will forgive. I will heal their land. Let's stand together, please.